So good afternoon. This is Kelly Carroll for the New York Preservation Archive Project. This is a series of interviews with New York City preservation activists on the grassroots level. And it's called, the series is called Inspired by Grassroots Stories, Community Architectural Advocacy. Before we begin our conversation today with Dr. Keith Taylor, I want to thank the New York State Council on the Arts and also Pat Reisinger for making this program possible today. I'm going to introduce Dr. Keith Taylor, who
Hello, how are you?
He is an adjunct assistant professor at the Department of Law, Police Science, and Criminal Justice Administration at John Jay College. A native New Yorker, he served as public safety professional for 26 years, retiring as an assistant commissioner. At the NYPD, he was inducted into its Honor Legion for performing an act of bravery at imminent personal risk. He was promoted from undercover narcotics detective to detective sergeant when he supervised internal affairs, missing persons, emergency service unit, special weapons and tactics, and Federal Emergency Management Agency urban search and rescue teams, receiving a commendation from Federal Bureau of Investigations Director Robert Mueller for resolving an incident of national significance at the United Nations New York City headquarters. As commanding officer of an intelligence bureau, he developed and improved policies, standards, and evaluation methodologies, specialized training, and interagency law enforcement coordination at the local, state, and federal levels. During this time, he earned master's degrees from City College of New York and the Naval Postgraduate School, as well as a doctorate from Columbia University's Teachers College. In addition to that, he is now the current chair of the Landmarks Committee at Manhattan's Community Board 10. So we have a very decorated individual with us today. And I'm gonna ask, so Keith is also the president of the Dorrance Brooks Property Owners and Residents Association, where he currently resides. So with all that, I'm familiar with the neighborhood. I used to be a resident myself. And Keith, when did you move to what's now known as Dorrance Brooks Square more prolifically because of your work?
Thank you for that incredible introduction. I just wanted to say when we first got on this Zoom call, I was busy walking my dog because my wife does not know me with all those titles. She knows me as Keith. And so, you know, Keith is fine for this interview. I much prefer that title. We moved into the house that we live in, which is right directly across the street from Dorrance Brooks Square in 2002. It was part of a New York City HPD effort to rejuvenate houses in the area. And so they wanted to get civil servants, teachers, firefighters, police officers into those homes through a lottery process, housing lottery process. I was fortunate enough to win the lottery out of the 3,000 individuals that applied for the 20 homes that were available. And this was I was able to get my top choice because it is so beautiful. The location is really incredible in a number of different ways, both for its architectural beauty as well as the cultural significance for everyone, but specifically for people of African descent, because a lot of important things happened here related to the Harlem Renaissance and the development of all the arts and culture and music. Also the civil rights movement was also in Central Harlem, and some of the planning and activities occurred on these streets. So the area offers a lot in both the architectural beauty as well as the cultural and historical significance for the city and the nation. So that's a long-winded answer as to how I got here.
Oh, that's amazing that you were selected through a lottery. And I think that the new historic district is even luckier to have you won that lottery, so that you could uplift and put this literally on the map, you and your organization. So I want to talk about your neighborhood organization, which is the Dorrance Brooks Property Owners and Residents Association. When did that organization form, and who were the founders?
It started at least 30 years ago in 1976. Earlene Golson, who's a neighbor, she lives three doors down the 36 Edgecombe. She was running it back then. And there was an article in the New York Times in 2001 that showed a picture of our block and talked about the changing neighborhoods in Harlem. And my home was actually still boarded up. It was still, what was previously a city-owned SRO, and it had been boarded up, and it was about to be gut renovated in the interior. So the Block Association has been around for years, and it has thought to keep the neighborhood as it is, to maintain its things like cleanliness and the on-time collection of trash and the efforts to beautify through planting of flowers and making certain that there's a voice to protect not just the block, but also Dorrance Brooks Square, to keep it as accessible and as clean and looking as it should.
Right. This is very common, I've found, in Harlem, that there are these longstanding community organizations that focus on quality of life issues for the residents. Would you agree that Harlem has a culture of community activism?
Absolutely. And I think that it's from the grassroots efforts that you really get the most astounding kinds of outcomes. We as a block association, we were a few years ago in 2018, we were really concerned because the development pressures were severe in this area. And we were trying to figure out what we could do, what options we had to perhaps save it. And there was a church in particular, Mount Calvary Church, which was on the chopping block because the owner wanted to tear down this historic church for development purposes. The houses here are 130 years old. It's like walking back in time when you walk in these neighborhoods. And to see it torn down simply because it's a part of Manhattan and Manhattan is a hot real estate scene, it's really discouraging for those who love this community, love the people here, love the history here, and want to maintain that for future generations.
Yeah, you're exactly right about this march of development entering Harlem. And unlike its southern neighbors, the Upper West and East Sides, who prophylactically had all of their landmark protections in place before this really big wave of the current wave we're experiencing of gentrification, not the healthy kind. Was Mount Calvary the catalyst for when your organization really kicked up the preservation efforts?
Yes, it was, because the demo permits had been issued and we were really sort of doing a lot of hand wringing and soul searching, trying to figure out what we could do to slow that down, possibly stop it, and have an alternative use for that beautiful church while maintaining its architectural honesty. So I got in contact with a couple of organizations that are involved in local community preservation. One was the West Harlem Community Preservation Organization, and Yuen Chen is the executive director. She's been helping communities like ours for many years, and also the Historic Districts Council, which Simon Bankoff is, Simeon Bankoff is there, and he's been doing the same thing. So we had them come to Mount United Methodist Church here, St. Mark's, historic church in its own right, in a community meeting, and that got the ball rolling. We're able to get in contact through these two organizations with a great historic preservationist architect, Marissa Marvelli. She helped us create the application that was the basis for our approval at the federal level and at the state level as a historic district, and now at the city level. It took many hands to put this together. There are many different people, elected officials, and other, Save Harlem Now, other community organizations that were really trying to prevent the types of tragedies that have occurred in terms of the loss of the unique, one-of-a-kind, historic identity of this neighborhood. And two blocks down, there was the Harlem Renaissance Ballroom. I'm sorry, the Renaissance Ballroom, not Harlem.
The Renaissance, yes. The
Renaissance, otherwise known as the Rennie. A lot of history there, and it was torn down after having been neglected for many years. The developers that bought the place said that it was too far gone to incorporate in their new designs. To me, that sounds like benign neglect, but that was a reason given to say just wholesale tearing it down and putting up a new modern building that is not at all in scale or in context in any way to the existing neighborhood. The good news is the historic district that we applied for and got approved by the Landmarks Preservation Commission includes the area across the street from the former Renaissance Ballroom. So it's got sort of a wide swath from West 135th and 7th to around Clayton Powell Boulevard, all the way up to 140th and St. Nicholas Avenue. It corresponds and connects to the existing Strivers Row Historic District. So it makes it one big area now of two combined historic districts. And right. I think I counted it. It's over 300 and something buildings, probably 350 buildings now. 250 with this most recent addition.
Right. So. And the adjoining historic districts that you just mentioned, it was designated in 1967. So it had been, it had been really since the creation of our city's landmarks law that the Landmarks Preservation Commission, that much time had passed before they came back to this area of Harlem. Luckily, many of the buildings were unscathed, and I would guess that it's because of the quality of their craftsmanship and their building materials that they survived that long, as well as the stewardship of their residents, of the people who live there.
I think also there may be an economic reason as well, that there may not have been the interest in development of this area over the many years up until, say, the last 20. So that lack of interest helped to preserve our housing stock as it exists. Now that there's a great interest in development, it's very difficult to hold on to what we've got. What people took for granted for many years is not that case anymore.
That's an excellent point. And what you just said about what we've always had for many years, now people are realizing that it's not there. It's not there by accident. And I truly believe that communities should have the power to self-determine their own futures. And I'm so glad that landmarking can at least keep the place looking the same. And so I wanted to ask you, so you got federal designation first. You were listed on the National Register of Historic Places, state and national registers. And then a couple of years later, you got New York City Historic District designation, which is the law that has teeth. Both of these designations required outreach. And so if I would like to know how you were able to talk to the other property owners in the neighborhood about each of these listings and what that was like. And
yeah, that was simply grassroots efforts, having meetings, which we had been doing anyway, but having meetings with all the neighbors, having the folks from the agencies involved, like the State Historic Preservation Office, come down and meet with residents at our block association meetings, as well as you know, the folks that I mentioned already, to educate them, to talk to them about the process, specifically the city landmarking, because there are negative connotations about the cost, the increased cost perceived to be to homeowners because of, and you know, this additional scrutiny from Landmarks Preservation for any changes that have to be made to the exterior of a home. And also, just the concern that landmarking would make it more difficult for homeowners, possibly affect their the value of their home, maybe even be a way of making it more difficult for the folks that live here to stay here, that be a long-term residence. And so that educational process was very helpful because it allowed them to ask questions and to come to an understanding that landmarking was not a method of trying to get rid of the population that lives there, and that it in fact opened up various avenues of resources to homeowners to allow them to maintain and improve their homes. I have for instance, a solar panel system on my roof as a result of the tax credits that I got from the state and the federal government as a result of that landmarking status. And so the city's status will add additional opportunities for assistance, financial assistance. So to homeowners who need to improve their homes.
And it's the historic preservation tax credit is an amazing tool. And you have to be in an eligible census tract, which you are. It's something that I wish we could do. We as preservationists could do more to spread this knowledge because it's such an incredible tool and incentivizes the preservation of one's home or block.
Indeed.
Let's talk about the neighborhood itself. This is Dorenzbrook Square has the amazing superlative of being the first public place in New York City to be named for an African-American person. And that was back in 1925. He was a World War I soldier who never made it home to Harlem, where he was from, dying in France, a decorated war hero. Would you like to talk a little bit about what it means to you and your community to then be in 2021, just in June, the first New York City historic district in our city's history to be named for an African American person?
I will say, you know, being proud is goes without saying. Having a sense of responsibility to remember the sacrifices of those who came before us is also comes to mind. And the particular struggle and journey of you know, the African-American experience dealing with Jim Crow segregation 100 years ago, and understanding the commitment to this country that these young men of color had to have in order to fight overseas for democracy on behalf of this country, which held them as second-class citizens in every sense of the imagination.
Yes.
So being able to honor Dorrance Brooks, who was a hero and died fighting for this country despite all the challenges presented to him as an African-American young man. It is humbling and certainly gives me a sense of purpose regarding my activities to preserve this beautiful area for future generations. So my grandkids will know that the little park across the street from our house was the first public square named for an African-American in the city of New York. And then the historic district in which it resides is the same thing, the first to be named after private first class Lawrence Brooks. Harlem Hellfighters.
Yeah.
And so.
And when you get off the BC train, when you look north, it'll look pretty much the same as it always has. And I think that's a wonderful thing. If only we could landmark the people, which I always say. So in that vein, what else do you think needs to be done in Harlem? Because, you know, I also always say the architecture doesn't change when you go north of 96th Street or 110 or whatever people are saying where Harlem starts now, depending on their real estate interests. What more needs to be done in Harlem, do you think? What would help Harlem out?
Well, Harlem, when you look at the individuals that live here now, there are a lot of socioeconomic challenges. It is an impoverished urban neighborhood. And so there's everything with the standard of living, the housing, the substandard for the many of the residents here. I think we have 60% of this neighborhood is, at or below the poverty level. The schools, the performance of the schools, the difficulties regarding youth and violence, which is pronounced and continuing. And of course, the pandemic, which has added a layer of complexity to all of these problems by highlighting the lack of access to adequate medical care for many residents here, resulting in much higher rates of individuals succumbing to the pandemic itself. So there are a lot of issues, large scale issues that really need to be addressed for the folks that live here. But one of the things that can get lost is this idea of preserving the historic integrity of the neighborhoods, which really are incredibly beautiful. And that can be evidenced by the tourists that come from around the world to see the architecture, to see where, Langston Hughes' home was, or Ella Baker sang, or Augusta Savage painted her great works known throughout the world 100 years ago, affecting the cultural future of this country. So that those are the things that come to mind. We have the large scale, big issues that we have to worry about and deal with effectively. And also staying focused, keeping the eye on the prize in terms of preserving as much of this neighborhood's integrity as possible.
Absolutely. And when the landmarks process was moving forward, there were some issues with some houses of worship within the proposed boundary lines. And I would like to know how this has panned out. We're losing our houses of worship. And I think that they are endemic to our shared culture as a nation. And I go abroad and I see houses of worship in other countries, and they're all still there. They might not be holy places or spaces anymore, but it's nice to have them around. And they're very much a part of the fabric of Harlem. So would you like to talk about that?
Absolutely. There was a study done by the Manhattan Borough President's Office, which is accessible online, about the destruction of houses of worship in Upper Manhattan and how developers have been targeting these areas because they are large development plots and they can get a lot of value out of using every bit of available building area to FAR to their advantage. It's a Stone Manhattan real estate, and whatever is built is a Manhattan address. So I think there was an article recently that said that New York City is higher in rent costs than even San Francisco. We're the most expensive place to live in the world right now. And that's nothing new. The question becomes, how do we make this city, how do we make this neighborhood as equitable as possible so that you can have socioeconomic diversity in the neighborhood to the level that is needed, to the level that exists currently? And until those issues are dealt with in a meaningful way, we're going to continue to have a lot of difficulties managing the housing crisis and the other things that I mentioned earlier.
Right. So I think we have time for about one more question. And I have a question for you. I have maybe time for two more questions. I have a question for you about the actual boundary lines because this area of Harlem is a mix of row houses and tenements. I used to live on the tenement block on 135th Street with the Walk of Fame. And I noticed that, loved that block, by the way. Very loud though, across from the precinct.
Yes.
I noticed that in the National Register boundaries, the tenement block at the northern part of the district is not there, but the Landmarks Commission decided to include that tenement building, the really beautiful one that kind of has the center part with the cornice, and then it fans out like a row of books. Do you know why those boundaries are different, or why that tenement block was decided to be kept?
I don't know. I can tell you that, you know, what's most interesting about this effort is that the application to the city, Landmarks Commission, Landmarks Preservation Commission, included only the boundaries that we had for the federal and state applications. Landmarks Preservation Commission came back to us and said, we want to add more to your.
We are going to have to wait 1 minute for him to come back. Come back in. Give it a minute.
Okay. Now, so Landmarks Preservation came back with a proposal that was almost double the size of our initial application. And this was because the community board, local community board 10, about 10 years ago, it actually created a historic preservation plan and identified 9 areas worthy of consideration by LPC for future preservation. So they combined number four and number five. We were number four, and number five was the area south of Stryver's Row. So that's 137th and 136th from 7th Avenue to, you know, Adam Clayton Powell Boulevard to Frederick Douglass Boulevard. So now it's, we're all one big happy family with Stryver's Row Historic District. And up the hill, we have the iconic City College of New York, which is it's a historic district. Sugar Hill is just north of that. That's also preserved. So the, all of this area now around Alexander Hamilton's house, which is a federal park in St. Nicholas Park, is all preserved for future generations. So it's a, it'd be a wonderful thing for people to come and visit. And we have a brand new hotel, the Marriott Hotel on 125th Street in the former Victoria Theater building. So there are facilities for people. I kind of sound like I'm a salesperson for Harlem Tourism, but I understand that as an important part of helping to keep areas like this alive.
Absolutely. And utilize the buildings that are historic and character defining features of the neighborhood. So our last question today, Keith, is having tremendous success getting the newest New York City Historic District designated, the newest district in Harlem, which has two sections, as you just explained. What would you impart to other neighborhoods in your area or everywhere? Because, you know, we're feeling development pressure in the Bronx and in Brooklyn, everywhere, in Staten Island even. What advice would you give them, having just gone through this process, about how they could preserve the places that they care about?
Well, you know, it's so funny. We just spoke about that historic preservation plan. If they Google Community Board 10 Historic Preservation Plan, it lays out step by step the efforts that a local block association can take to get this kind of inertia going, to get in contact with your local elected officials and community stakeholders, and basically to allow for the synergy that's necessary to take place in order to get this effort done. We were very fortunate in that we started officially 3 years ago, and we are in the final leg of this journey. And I suspect within the next few weeks, we may get a hearing at City Council to get the final approval for the city city process. So,
I hope so. So, yeah, it was a relatively quick process, and I'm thrilled that the Landmarks Commission is. It has been focusing more attention on communities of color in the past few years. Groups that have beautiful neighborhoods, have beautiful cultural significance, and it's definitely been past due. So congratulations to you and to your organization. New York is lucky to have you, and future New York is going to be even luckier. So thank you so much for your time today, Keith. And
thank you so much for your patience as I've been running around trying to take care of some things as I'm leaving my home for vacation. But I feel like I'm the one who should be very thankful for having the opportunity and the ability to make life better for folks that are here. And hopefully for future generations as well.
Excellent. Well, I hope that you enjoy your vacation.